This is the third podcast in a series on the major world religions. We began with Hinduism, and although Buddhism comes after Judaism, I included it in the class on Hinduism because they both come from India and one is the continuation of the other. Next, we looked at Judaism. So first, we looked at two Eastern religions. Last time, we looked at a Western religion. Many of the principles and even a good number of the tips that these podcasts close with are similar. Because to reach out to people, we have to understand where they're coming from and then respectfully teach them the truth, which is where we want to lead them. And so this third lesson, we're going to talk about Confucianism, but I'm going to again combine it with another religion, which is Taoism. Both of these are associated with China, and just as Hinduism is by far most common among the Indians and Indian communities worldwide, so with Confucianism and Taoism. It's where Chinese people or Chinese culture has had an influence. Confucianism is attributed to Confucius or Kongzi, and he lived a similar time as the Buddha, about 500 years before Christ. The writings are called the Wu Jing and the Su Shu, or the Analects of Confucius. By the way, I read the Analects of Confucius first when I was an undergraduate student at Duke University. They were interesting, short, easy to read. I read them again later on, and I even went through a course recently on the great minds of the East. It's fascinating stuff, and I do not discourage you from studying the other world religions. What I discourage, though, is doing that instead of really knowing the Word of God. So Confucianism spreads, but it's not to be thought of as religion so much as a philosophy. It's not so much a theology as a way of life. Confucianism emphasizes order in society, which reflects the order of heaven itself. Confucianism doesn't tell us about God. It simply tells us that heaven, the order of heaven, is reflected on earth in earthly governments. When there's order in our own heart, there'll be order in the family. When there's order in the family, then there'll be peace in the community. And when there's order in the community, there'll be peace in the nation. And it goes like that. And so Confucianism is intended to help people to be good citizens, to succeed in life, to be industrious. There's a high value on education. Where do people live? Well, see, there are very few people who would say, I'm a Confucianist. Maybe a scholar would. So when I say, where do Confucianists live? Maybe I should say instead, what countries are strongly influenced by Confucianism? What cultures embody these ideals? Well, they're principally in China. Both Chinas, that is, the Republic of China on Taiwan and mainland China. In Korea and Japan and Vietnam. And other places where the Chinese have settled, like Singapore. What are the basic teachings? I've talked about the importance of order and harmony, and that Confucianism is not a thought-out theology. And the best way to get a feel for the teaching and the moderation, even the humility of Confucianism, as I said, is to read the Analects. The Analects are the words of Confucius. Now, at the same time, I want to talk about Taoism. Now, the Tao, or the way, is a term not just from Taoism. It was a favorite concept of C.S. Lewis, the Christian apologist, because he argues that when it comes to basic morality, don't take what belongs to others, don't deceive, don't murder, don't commit adultery, and so forth, those are common to all faiths. That, I believe, is true. At the philosophical level, you'll find greater differences, and at the practical level. But all religions acknowledge, at least in some way, that there is a way. There is some kind of truth we need to align ourselves with. Taoism is very concerned with balance in nature. Oh, as far as the founder, it's normally attributed to Lao Tzu. Lao Tzu lives a little bit before Confucius. Confucius is the mid-500s to around 480 BC. Lao Tzu lives approximately 600 to 500 BC. The main writings would be the Tao Te Ching. Perhaps you'll read them one day. Taoists, where do they live? It's kind of hard to estimate. Taoism is normally part of Chinese folk religion, which involves many magical practices. And it's estimated that there may be 400 million people in the world who are influenced by that. So the worldwide range, the estimate, the upper limit would be 400 million just in China. But of course, we know many Chinese are atheists or they're leaning towards Christianity now. The lower range may be only 20 million. And Taoism flourishes in places where Chinese culture is strong. Again, China, Taiwan, Malaysia, and Singapore. And Taoism, unlike Confucianism, is not so much a system to keep order in society. Taoism is more of a philosophy. It's not as there's not a teaching in such a personal God. Now, they have temples, and I've been to Taoist. Once I went to a Taoist temple. I remember what it looked like, and I remember the people didn't look so happy. But I think that's maybe an impression I have often when I visit synagogues and when I visit mosques and Hindu temples and, you know, religious places around the world. A lot of people, they do it. Maybe they go because they're concerned. They have something on their heart. Or they're sad. You know, life can be sad. But Taoism emphasizes balance. You've heard of yin and yang. And when things are out of balance, things aren't right. So there's a tremendous emphasis on nature. Well, this fusion, which is really what it is, of Confucianism and Taoism is characteristic of traditional Chinese society. Now, I'd like to give just a couple thoughts about outreach, because so few people self-identify as Confucianist or Taoist. Evangelism of Confucianists and Taoists is really evangelism of the Chinese people. Because of the long experiment with communism, which of course began early in the 20th century and by 1949, it was the official ideology of mainland China. Because of that, there isn't very much faith. Faith in a personal God is something that's very attractive to people from this culture. And that's why, well, one reason I think, there's such a flourishing house church movement in mainland China right now. You probably know that. There are tens of millions of people meeting in underground or unregistered churches. And I think originally ethnologists greatly underestimated the number of Chinese who were Christians. The Church of the East in the, say, the 400s, 500s AD were actively spreading the faith in China. By the 600s, there were churches in large churches in every major city of China. And eventually, when the emperor was cracking down on foreign cults, this is in the 9th century AD, the Buddhists were targeted because they were viewed as an exotic cult because they came from India, and Christians were greatly persecuted and their numbers dwindled. But today, Christianity is enjoying a resurgence. And it's if you ever have a chance to go to China, I hope that you will you do what you can to reach out, to get into conversations, maybe to meet your brothers and sisters there. So these are my suggestions. Don't underestimate how attractive the gospel is to people from this culture. The idea of a personal God, a God who cares. Life is so hard. Government has been so controlling. The idea that there's a sovereignty in heaven who doesn't just look at us and try to regulate us and want something from us, but he cares for us. He longs for relationship. That's quite amazing. In this culture also, it's not very common for fathers to be very expressive. And again, emphasizing the fatherhood of God. And it's not just the fatherhood of God. I could even say, in a sense, the feminine side of God. The images that emphasize his nurture and care. Jesus wanted to gather us as a hen gathers her chicks. Emphasizing passages like 1 Thessalonians 2. Paul says that he nurtured and cared for and warned and admonished like a mother and like a father, the apostles behaved among the churches that they were establishing. So the personal God, the expressiveness of God, his love, you know, talking with people about their father relationship, I think is very important for atheists and certainly for people from a Confucianist or Taoist background. A third, Chinese culture. Now, you may smile a little bit when I say this, but for if someone is from this background, a great way to connect, to win points, is to appreciate that culture, to appreciate the food, the history, to do your part, not to be what we say, you know, the ugly American or the ugly Briton who, you know, I don't eat that food or I don't care about that or it all sounds the same to me. They all look alike. I think we really need to overcome such prejudices and push ourselves and embrace, as long as it's not biblical, not unbiblical, let's embrace the new. We have much to learn. So, and the final idea, many of the Confucianist and Taoist ideals are actually good. Many of them are things that we should be respecting. Balance in nature, you know, taking care of our bodies, harmony in society, not being difficult, respecting nature, not polluting, modeling respect, you know, ecology, caring for the environment. We should model respect, traditional Chinese value and Confucian value. Work hard. Now, we don't go so far as to put work before family. That's sadly what often happens. But hard work is biblical. There's scriptures on that, you know. Be respectful. Don't talk too loud. Special caveat for my fellow Americans who are known worldwide for the level of volume in their conversations. But why can't we model respect and order, respect towards our elders, living a quiet life, as 1 Thessalonians 4 emphasizes, working hard, being among the best workers at our place of employment. And so, whether it's the harmony of Confucianism, the balance of Taoism, we need to take the good of all religions and understand it. Let me close this podcast with a simple analogy, which I use often when I do presentations on world religions. It has to do with the moon and the sun. You may think, hearing some things I say, that, oh, maybe I'm a pluralist. You know, maybe I think that all religions are true, or, you know, it's okay, you don't really need to become a Christian. Well, that's not my position, I assure you. The moon and the sun. The moon is not known for giving people, let's say, for causing blindness. Even on the most brilliant night, the largest harvest moon or the brightest moon in the evening sky, you look at it, it doesn't hurt you. On the other hand, look at the sun, unless it's obscured by thick cloud, but look at the sun for a second, just a fraction of a second, and it's painful. It's so intense. I believe that the truth of God, which is often compared to light, just as God is compared to light, the truth of God is like the sun. It's direct. It is reflected in the moon. So when you see the moon in the night sky, just as if you happen to see Venus or Mars or Jupiter or Saturn, you're seeing it because of the reflection, because the light of the sun is bouncing off of it. All the world religions are like the moons. They reflect the light of the sun to some extent. And that's why I'm not surprised to find some truth, some good in all cultures, religions, philosophies. On the other hand, the difference between one world religion and biblical faith, the differences among the philosophies and religions of man and God's way, the way of Jesus Christ, not the Tao of Taoism. Tao means the way, but I mean the true Tao, the true way that Jesus spoke about, is like the difference between the moon and the sun. One is only a pale reflection of the other.